sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play.
What's going on, Cubs fans? You're listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. We are your hosts. I am Sean Sears. Joining me today is Ryan Davis, the other co-host of Locked On Cubs. Ryan, how was your weekend, man?
Can't complain too much. Spent it at home with my family, and I ate pizza, and I also made some really good spaghetti, so I guess you can't beat that, right?
That sounds awesome, actually. I did a whole lot of nothing this weekend, too. My girlfriend and I were running around to, like, three different families' Thanksgivings last weekend. So
yep.
This weekend, we took it easy and watched a bunch of football.
Yeah, we watched Christmas stuff. We watched the cartoon, the original Grinch.
Okay.
The only good Grinch, in my opinion. So.
Oh, my gosh. See, I agree. My girlfriend loves the 2001 Ron Howard. Yeah, with Jim Carrey.
Ugh. Yeah, my daughter loves it, and I think it's on Netflix. So I just like, if you watch it by yourself, that's fine.
Yeah, well, we're clearly in the Christmas spirit here. On episode 157, we're going to be discussing the Cubs' decision to offer Addison Russell a contract. We kind of teased this in an episode we didn't post last week, so we'll kind of dive into this a little bit more, kind of get our opinions on Russell. But now that we know what happened, we can kind of give a little more in-depth discussion on why the Cubs are doing this. Because I think you and I are both on record of being on the team that wants to fire Addison Russell out of a cannon. So
into the sun.
Yeah, into the sun. I'm sorry. I didn't the specifics.
very important.
Yeah, it is. It's crucial. Later, rumors circulated this weekend and kind of before so, linking the Cubs to Marlins catcher JT Realmuto, and the Cubs will reportedly be willing to move on for Wilson Contreras, which is really strange. We'll talk about that. Also, Ryan, I don't know if you officially made the announcement on the podcast, but Ryan's going to be writing for Forbes. His first story came out today. We're going to talk to Ryan a little bit about that. It's basically a decision of if the Cubs only could decide to improve one side of the ball or one position or one spot, I guess, would it be the bullpen or would it be an offensive player at the plate? And then finally, we'll wrap up the show by going through the most recent offseason moves here that we discussed a little bit on a Wednesday pod, but we're going to kind of go through them again. Quickly, I don't know if you said anything about Forbes, but congratulations, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I got somebody who reached out to me about that, and I started talking to them, and it just kind of worked out really well. They're going to have me write about the Cubs and the Cardinals this upcoming season, and I guess the offseason, and even more importantly for me, they're an outlet that can get me into the ballpark talking to players and coaches and management, so that's important to me, being able to have that access, and yeah, it's a part-time gig that's going to help me a lot this year, I think.
Yeah, well, congrats, man. You clearly deserve it. I know we talked about it a bunch already, but I'm excited to see what happens here with Forbes. This is an interesting opportunity. So
yeah, thanks.
Of course, of course. And of course, if you guys haven't checked it out yet, I'll link Ryan's story in the description for the podcast, but definitely check it out for him today. I'm sure you can find it on Twitter. I think I retweeted it from Lockdown Cubs. If I haven't, I will. You guys should be able to find it, though. So
I did.
Yeah. Perfect. All yeah. Taken care of. So let's jump into this first segment. Of course, Addison Russell sticking around. There were kind of reports throughout last week that Russell was in Chicago meeting with the Cubs. Dave Kaplan was almost positive the Cubs were going to resign or at least try to tender Addison Russell a contract. And then, of course, news broke this Friday that the Cubs were going to be tendering Addison Russell. Both Russell and Epstein released statements kind of describing the situation. Russell's apparently going to get help. Theo Epstein feels like the Cubs are responsible for some of this because it happened on their watch and they want to be part of the solution. What was your kind of take from this? I wasn't necessarily surprised personally, but I just kind of am. I don't know. It's a little discomforting the way the Cubs are going about this right now, to me at least.
Yeah, and I agree. It's too little too late. If you look at just the statements they put out in a vacuum, no context from what they had said or done before that, you would say this looks like a team that and a player finally handling domestic violence the right way. They said all the right things. I'm sure both of them went to like really good PR people to, you know, make sure everything was said and done the right way. You can credit them as much as you want for that, but the problem is all the things that happened leading up to this. You know, Addison Russell essentially admitting what he had done. He didn't come out and directly say it, but he said past behavior. So he's telling you he did some things he shouldn't have. And if you look at that, it feels almost like the kid that gets backed into the corner by his parents when he's lying to get himself out of trouble, and then all of a sudden he realizes he can't lie to get himself out of trouble anymore, so he has to tell the truth.
Right.
You don't give that kid credit for coming clean. You know, it's just like, did you tell the truth because it's the right thing, or did you tell the truth because you had no other options? And so that's really what it is, you know, when this first happened, he called his now ex-wife a liar, essentially. Mm-hmm. Said it wasn't true. He denied it when he knew full well that he did all those things. So I just can't credit him for coming clean now, when essentially he had to. Of course, he talked about how he went and got a therapist. Mm-hmm. You know, good for you. I mean, I legitimately hope that this is all you know, on the up and up, and that Russell is doing his best to become a better person, realizes that he has these problems, and that he's doing this, you know, because they do share a son, so it's for his family. I really hope that all the things they said are true, and that it's I can take it at face value, but I just can't. You know, I think this is from the Cubs' point of view, trying to rebuild value because they want to move on from him, because they've wanted to move on from him for a while. And from his point of view, I think it's to also kind of rebuild that value and you know, save face a little bit in the eyes of teams around Major League Baseball, so he can get a starting opportunity somewhere else.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel it is a little bit too. It feels like more so that the Cubs and Russell realized it was mutually beneficial for them to kind of be on the same page, work together, see if they can make the best of a situation. But the way Epstein span it and everything like that, I don't know, maybe not span it. I just hope that, like, Epstein gave us a little bit of a glimpse of what their plan is to better this situation, to improve, like, that first off, this doesn't happen again in their organization, but also to, like, try and leave a situation better than it was. It's probably impossible. But I can at least appreciate those efforts, and I want to believe that this is something that they're going to try and do. But that being said, too, I mean, like, just telling us that you're working with a family rescue non-for-profit in Chicago and that you're hoping that you can find a way to, you know, work with their award-winning efforts to educate domestic violence in Chicago or something, is a quote from Theo. Like, it just seems like a lot of lip service, and I hope it's not, but it's also very easy to kind of figure out the motives behind some of this. So, like you were saying before, so to me, it just seems like, from a perspective of a Cubs fan that's dealt with this particular issue for almost 2 years now, or at least two seasons, like you said, exactly, too little too late. This should have been handled right away. You shouldn't have. I mean, the way the Cubs went about it to begin with was more of that they were hoping it was going to die, and less of like, we need to address the situation. So,
yeah. And I will say this for Theo Epstein: if there's anyone in that organization who legitimately cares about this issue, about domestic violence, and about how this impacts their organization and their reputation, it's him. He really does care. This really does bother him. And I know he feels like he made some mistakes, essentially just believing Addison Russell when he said it was fake or, you know, false.
Sure.
Yeah. I know he feels like he made a mistake there, and that's something he should be learning from going forward. But at the same time, I think his goal really is building the value so he can move on from him. If he didn't believe that they could build that value to the point where they could trade him, I think they non-tender him. So saying that they believe that they should be part of the solution is all fine and good, but I think that's more predicated on being able to get something for him in a trade than it is about actually welcoming Addison Russell back into the family. Because he even said in his statement, this doesn't mean that he's going to be on the team this year. And
right. I
think that was the key thing is, you know, we're going to be part of the solution, but only because it's, we have to tender him a contract to be able to trade him. That's disingenuous.
Yeah. That's how I felt too, because you and I both know, I mean, even before this stuff became a thing again, and you know, who knows how far away it was out of the picture, but you know, Addison Russell had probably played some of his last days in a Cubs uniform, regardless of this happening. This just seemed like it solidified it, but yeah. You know, I guess the other question would be, do you think Russell actually does play for the Cubs in 2019, or is he just a guy that once they kind of maybe repair his public image, they can throw in a trade?
Yeah, that's how I think they would go about it, is that he might just be a throw in a trade or a sweetener, I guess. And again, that's not because the market, the way it moves, and this is, I think, something we talked about on the podcast that didn't post, the Cubs essentially had to tender him a contract to move him because they weren't going to be able to just jump on a trade right away and do a huge deal. I mean, obviously the Mariners and the Mets just pulled one off, but we don't have a whole lot of big trades that happen early in November. Teams are more willing to wait it out towards the middle of the offseason to see what they can get. So, yeah, if they're going to trade Addison Russell, it was going to come in the middle of the offseason, and they knew that meant they were going to have to tender him a contract. So I think that's probably where it goes. It wouldn't totally shock me to see him back with the Cubs next year, but you know, I felt for a while that that the 2018 season would be the end of his tenure with the Cubs, so I'm sticking with that.
Yeah, that's how I kind of feel too. I just don't see – I mean – I could see Addison Russell being on this team just because I don't think baseball's teams are going to work off of what their morals tell them. They're going to work off of what the bottom line tells them and what they can turn. I mean, Addison Russell is essentially just an asset at this point, you know, or whatever, if you right. want to even call him that. The Cubs would just see him as a piece, you know, and nothing more probably at this point, which is probably the way to go, I guess. It's just,
yeah. You know. If a bunch of teams are willing to take a chance, or at least two teams are willing to take a chance on Aroldis Chapman, and the Astros are willing to trade for Roberto Osuna after what happened with them. I think the fact that Russell admitted that he was wrong and said that he wants to make a change, whether that's, you know, legitimate or not, at least he said those things. I think teams are going to look at that and see something they can spin to their fan base as, here's a guy who's contrite, and here's a guy who is willingly accepting his suspension, and here's a guy who wants to do better, and they can kind of use that as the face of what they're doing, and maybe they feel better about it for that reason. But you know, I think those of us who pay attention know better.
That's how I feel. That's about it. Just none of it seems like it's the right thing to do, but I can see why they're doing it. So yeah. That's about it I had on this segment. I don't know. It's frustrating, but we'll have to see how it develops this offseason. And, you know, I would still expect the Cubs to try and move him in some way. We just have to kind of see how the offseason develops. So let's dive into our second segment here in just a moment. We'll talk about JT Realmuto interest here from the Cubs and kind of go over this Craig Meesch report here on Locked On Cubs. So there was a story that kind of surfaced, I think, right before the weekend, and people kind of picked it up as they went through here. Craig Meesch reported, of course, Craig Meesch, I think he's an MLB reporter, but I think he also does, I know he's got a show on SiriusXM Radio. I'm not quite sure what exactly Craig Meesch does, but it seems like he always tweets these random rumors, and I feel like he's really like 50-50 on some of these things. But he tweeted saying, he's a legitimate source, I guess, but he said, "I'm unclear what level of interest the Cubs have in Realmuto, but they do. Sources have indicated to me they could move on from Contreras as well." What?
Yeah, I was on the radio with Julie DeCarol on 670 The Score right after this happened, and we talked about it a little bit. And I think there's two really important ways of looking at this. The first is that it is kind of ridiculous, and Wilson Contreras kind of subtweeted the whole thing and said, LOL. And I think that's the right way to take it. Is
yeah.
The Cubs are not actively looking to dump Wilson Contreras. That said, I think Realmuto is a player that they would be interested in if they did move Wilson Contreras. And the Cubs are always looking at everything. They're not the team that says, well, we have a catcher, so we're not going to at least inquire about this catcher. They're always looking for new stuff to make the team better. And they're not going to, Theo Epstein says no untouchables. That's been a big thing that's been said this offseason, especially with that stupid Chris Bryant rumor. But, I think if there is an untouchable list, it's a short list, and Wilson Contreras probably isn't on it. They would have to be really blown away with a deal to move him, but I think they would. He's not perfect, we'll say. I mean, he is one of the top five catchers in the game overall when he's playing at his best, but I know they really value pitch framing. That's something that he doesn't do all that well.
No.
He hasn't shown a ton of improvement at it. It's not to say he hasn't worked at it, but at this point, let's say theoretically that the front office doesn't believe he's ever really going to get much better at pitch framing. Would they be considering moving on from him or trading him to bring in maybe a really good starting pitcher or an ace and then go, flip some players to get Realmuto? It's not out of the realm of possibility. Do I think that's what they're actively doing? No, but I also don't think Contreras is untouchable.
Yeah, this is for the end of 2017. I think it might be a little bit of a story or a little bit of a different story just because Contreras, before he got hurt in 17 for a little bit, was, on pace for a potential MVP season. Was playing great. Clearly, the defense was solid. When you add in the offensive potential he has, he turns into one of the best players in baseball, obviously. At least one of the best catchers, or at least more complete catchers in baseball. But Mish also put out a tweet shortly after that saying the Cubs had 5% chance of signing him. I hate when people give percentages of things. Like, it's just, such an arbitrary thing because it's all just opinion. Like, there's no, you know what I mean? It's not like there's some scientific backing behind that. He's just I think the Astros have 20%. The Braves, Rockies, and Yankees have 10. And, it's just what? No, what? That doesn't make any sense. But
right.
The Cubs' interest, like you said, is probably very minimal. But at the same time, they're going to listen to everything. They're not going to turn this down. I thought it was interesting. Someone kind of put out the idea that the Cubs could maybe try and package Contreras with a guy like Hayward or something like that, and then try and move those two to get something back and then bring back Realmuto. Because not only would you then be able to save money, but you might be able to add Realmuto as well as go after Harper, Machado, whoever. That's interesting, but that's probably less likely than just Wilson Contreras getting traded. So,
yeah, and I think at this point, because of his age, because of what he already has been, both offensively and as a defensive catcher minus pitch framing, I think you probably have to get a ton if you're going to trade Wilson Contreras. Mm-hmm. Catchers like him just, they're rare. He had a really bad offensive season, like most Cubs players did, outside of Javi Baez and a few others. But yeah, he has the talent. He showed it in 2017. Like you said, it was borderline MVP numbers in the second half before he got hurt. So yeah, if you're going to move him, it has to be a huge deal where you get a ton back. Maybe you replenish the upper levels of your minors with pitching. Maybe you get a guy like Syndergaard. That's the kind of deal where it wouldn't totally shock me to see them move him. But yeah, it just doesn't seem likely, especially adding on to this, the fact that he's coming off a season where his value is kind of at its lowest.
Right, exactly. It just, it screams of MLB The Show trade and nothing more to me. So
yeah, exactly.
Let's dive into this article you wrote here for Forbes today. You're kind of telling me about it. I haven't had the chance to read it. I saw it and retweeted it today, but I know you were telling me it's essentially, I guess, just explain the article. You wrote it. You know more than I do.
Yeah. So I was thinking about it, and the thought that came into my head, you kind of said this earlier, was, let's say hypothetically that the Cubs can only fix one, or not fix, but add, upgrade one, the offense or the bullpen, which is more important. And I even asked a friend of mine just kind of that blank question to find out what his answer was. And he's like, when I think about it, the bullpen. And I was like, yeah, it seems like it's obvious, right? If you just envision the players that they have on both, the Cubs have already lost Jesse Chavez. They're most likely not bringing back Justin Wilson. I think he's probably going to get more years and money than I think they should offer him. So I don't think he's coming back. You've got Morrow, who is injured every single year. I wrote in the story that when they signed him, he had I think 20 appearances in a season, either as a starter or a reliever, in only one of the previous five seasons, and that was 2017 with the Dodgers after they had a good season with them. So before that, four straight years, less than 20 appearances on the mound, just constantly hurt. This guy's on the DL practically every year, so they should have accounted for that. And they didn't have necessarily a great fallback solution other than Strope, who's fantastic, but it really weakened the bullpen. So he's 34 this year. Strope's going to be 34. Cishek, whose arm practically fell off, I think he set career highs in both innings and appearances. He's going to be 33. You also have Edwards, who is great stuff, but he goes through these stretches where he's completely unreliable, and you don't really have a whole lot after that. So they have some like really high talent in their bullpen, but they're like one injury and one guy performing below expectations away from kind of a bad bullpen. And that's really that's not good enough. We've seen in the couple years past that to win the World Series, or at least to make a deep run in the postseason, you have to have a bullpen where you can rely on a couple guys to really get you there. And are you able to sit here and say right now that they have two guys that come October you can lean on in 2019? And I don't think they do. I think if Strope is healthy, that's a guy who can pitch you the seventh or eighth inning in the postseason. But even he, it's not like he constantly has arm injuries. He's had a couple little injuries here and there the last few years that have kind of set him back, and they're kind of like the one running to first base, and then he had one fielding a ball in 2016. So you just don't have these two guys you can lean on. Whereas like the Brewers, Josh Hader, Corey Knebel, to a lesser extent, Jeffress, but Knebel and Hader, those are two guys that you're just like, yeah, pencil them in. If they get hurt, they get hurt. And that's not something we can foresee, but these are guys that we know are going to dominate. So for the Cubs, from their point of view, I think the offense, considering how great they were in the first half and the two previous seasons, I think they're more likely to bounce back and be great just as they are. Now, in the piece I said, the Cubs have the means to upgrade both, so it's just a hypothetical question whether they could just do one. It's just to make you think. And they should upgrade both. But it just seems like it's obvious the bullpen is more important at this point.
Yeah, we did our interview with Len Casper last Friday. If you guys haven't listened to that, please check that out. But Len specifically named Carl Edwards, CJ, as the guy that he thought had potential to really, clearly dynamic stuff, but can't seem to control it. I was thinking the potential and talent is there for CJ, but it just seems like every year he has a 2-month period where he either looks really good or really bad. It's just like he trades starts and it kind of almost makes him a wash. And at this point, CJ's 28, 29, he's getting closer to 30. He might be turning 27. Actually, I'll take a look here really quick, but I guess the point I'm making here is, Carl Edwards is great, but not reliable. And that's kind of how I feel like you look at everyone else in this bullpen, either guys that have injury history and you don't really know what you can expect from them, or guys that he's 27. He turns
be 28 in September, so that's older than I realized.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think we're at the point kind of where CJ Edwards is kind of the guy he is. I don't know if there's another step to him. We've seen it before. Andrew Miller's a great case. He didn't really figure himself out until he was about 30 31, and he's always had elite stuff, was a starter kind of like CJ for a moment. But, that those are more few and far between and less of the norm. So I don't think you can look at CJ and be like, all right, he's going to turn 30 and suddenly figure out how to throw his curveball. But you look at everyone else, there's not a ton of high ceiling guys. What you get is what you get about a lot of these. They need to add an influx of players. I see you mentioned guys like Kelvin Herrera, Tyler Clipper, Joaquin Soria. Herrera.
Budget guys, right? Like exactly. Guys who fly under the radar, who probably aren't going to get the Kimbrel money. Those are the comparison to like the Cishek deal, where I thought for as reliable and flexible as Cishek has been his entire career, it was absolutely criminal that he was signed for 2 years and $13 million.
I would agree. Honestly, I mean, like, you look at bullpens like the Angels 2 years ago, even the Athletics last year to an extent, you don't have to have lockdown superstar guys to have an effective bullpen. You just have to pick the right guys and hope they get the best season sometimes. You know, it really is sometimes just a crapshoot with what you get in your bullpen, because you could look at a team and be like, okay, well, you know, Brian Dunson's going to be their left-handed reliever, and 2 months later be like, oh, wow, Brian Dunson, really good left-handed reliever, you know, and now 2018 rolls through and it's like, oh, wow, Brian Dunson, back to career norms. You know, so I mean, you know, bullpens are so just erratic and tough to tough to figure out who's where and what's doing what, and you know, that's why guys like Fernando Rodney pop up for 2 months of a season sometimes and can find success for a moment, but they're not, you know, it's hard to find reliable guys, and the four or five that do it all the time get paid millions of dollars, and the Cubs aren't about to do that right now, so they have to get creative. So I like the idea, and if you had to make me pick, you know, my heart says I want Bryce Harper, I want offense, but if I had to say, you know, if you had to pick one, bullpen makes the most sense to me too. So
yeah, and you know, the what you talked about with the erratic nature of the bullpen, they have some guys who have, you know, history of being good, like Brandon Kinsler. I think every Cubs fan hears that name and cringes because they only saw what he did with the Cubs, but look at his stats from years past, he's been good. He's also on the older side. I think he's 33 or 34. So, you know, it's possible he's beyond his prime, and relievers who don't really strike people out are always kind of nerve wracking for me. So I'm not a huge fan, but this is a guy who is on a $5 million deal. So he's going to be back. That's not a guy you just release unless he's just god awful in spring training or he's hurt or something like that. So yeah, that's a guy that you're kind of like bringing along and hoping maybe he can bounce back and have a good year and you can keep him. Same thing for Dunson. He's on a lower money deal, so you're kind of hoping maybe he can bounce back and be better. Then you've got guys like Tyler Chatwood where you don't know what you're doing with him.
Yeah.
And what are you doing there? You've got Mike Montgomery, who at this point is, you know, an injury away from the rotation, but if everybody's healthy, he's in the bullpen. So you can kind of rely on him, but you know, look at his stats from last year. He wasn't all that great as a reliever. He was really good as a starter, but you know, he didn't perform all that well until he got into the rotation. So it, as far as having relievers that you can rely on, I think there are just maybe a couple relievers that I feel totally comfortable with going into next year, and that's Strope and Cishek.
No Dylan Maples?
Because they did... Yeah, well, I mean, that's a guy that it should be on the list. I mentioned Dakota Mechs or Mechas.
Yeah, I don't
know how to pronounce his name. That's a guy who's a real relief prospect. And I didn't mention Dylan Maples, but you know, there's a couple guys like them. Like Dwayne Underwood, I think, could be like a reliever that comes in and does like two innings for you.
Sure.
Those are guys that I think you could bring in and try out. But you know, that it's hard for me to sit here and say, like, so you've got Strope and you've got Cishek, you got Morrow, who's great when he's out there, but he's always hurt. You got Edwards, who always has a month where he's completely unusable, but otherwise he's great. You know, you really don't have a great group of reliable guys. Is that what you want to do if you're a World Series contender? Like, if you're the Cincinnati Reds or you're the Pittsburgh Pirates, or I guess even like an Oakland A's who weren't expected to be as great as they were, you can do that. You can just bring in a whole bunch of low-cost guys and see, like, you know, who's going to work out and who doesn't, and you know, what prospects are going to step up, and what, you know, veterans coming off a bad year on a 1 year, you know, $3 million deal, who's going to step up and be great. You can do that if you're those teams. I just don't know if the Cubs can roll into next season and do that. And maybe the offense rebounds and the starting rotation is good, but the bullpen is injured and blowing every lead in April and May. Those are the times when it's almost impossible to go get a really good reliever because everyone thinks they're in it. I think you can fix a bullpen more easily than you can the other aspects of your team at, you know, the trade deadline. But until then, it's hard. So this is something that makes me nervous, the idea that they're, you know, could roll into next season without a couple more really good relief pitchers.
Right. Well, I mean, you look at it. This will be our final point here, and then we'll let roll to this final segment. You look at a team like the Nationals, like a terrible bullpen for the good part of the first half of the season. Offense kind of not being able to find itself in moments, or, you know, their bullpen, the games the offense did score like 5-6 runs, their bullpen gave up 8, you know, like it just kills your team. And if the Cubs offense is going to be as sporadic as we've seen it in history and the last couple of years, having a bullpen is huge, because at the very least, you know, that was what kept the Cubs kind of rolling for a little bit this year, was, you know, yeah, you knew Jesse Chavez was going to come in for 2 innings, you knew Pedro Strop was going to shut the door. If you could get something out of Justin Wilson or CJ Edwards throughout that game, that's awesome. But, you know, you knew like guys were going to come in and at least give the Cubs an opportunity. If you don't have that, I mean, if Cubs offense is, you know, stop and go for good part of 2019, you've got to be able to look at some guys and be like, hey, we need you to hold this down for, you know, 4 batters. Can you do that? And yeah, outside of Strop, like you said, maybe C-Sheck, I'm not confident in anyone else.
Right. Yeah. And that, I think people also forget that the rotation was, you know, not so great early in the year.
Sure.
And the bullpen really kept them alive the first few months. And I don't know if you can rely on them to do that again, especially, you know, what you saw the second half of the season, and now losing, you know, Wilson and Jesse Chavez, who came in and took over for Morrow and was so good. Mm-hmm. And it's being really down on it. So this will be my final point on it. This bullpen could be really good.
Sure.
I think every single team, this is something a lot of people don't realize, every single team has these high ceiling guys in their bullpen, because now pretty much every team has a ton of guys who can throw 97, 98 miles an hour. Everyone thinks they could have a great bullpen. I think the Cubs could have a great bullpen, but, you know, every year there are the teams that don't have a great bullpen because they have a guy or two get hurt, or they have a guy or two who don't have the season that you expect. So I think adding more in that area is probably the most important thing the Cubs should be looking to do.
Yeah, I would agree. So let's roll to this third and final segment. We'll kind of go over some of the offseason moves that happened this last week and kind of just give our thoughts on it as we wrap up the show. So the Cubs had a somewhat busy offseason week, I guess you could say, at least the busiest one so far. It started with the Cubs acquiring Ronald Torres from the Yankees for a player to be named later, or cash. He was picked up, and kind of, you know, the idea behind it was middle infielder help. And I think he's got a couple options over Tommy La Stella. Shortly after that, Tommy La Stella was traded to the Angels, which was seemed like a cap saving move. We talked about this with Len Casper. Len had nothing but nice things to say about Tommy La Stella, particularly his offense. But I think the three of us all kind of agreed, you know, Torres kind of gives you more than what Tommy La Stella added. And then they non-tendered Alan Webster, Justin Hancock, and Ronald Torres. I believe they could still negotiate a deal with him, but what exactly does that mean after trading for this guy and then non-tendering him, right?
Yeah, I think they could still work out a deal with him and bring him back, but, you know, I didn't think he was going to make that much money, and
right,
he's already a guy with minor league options. So I don't know. I guess it was about clearing up the 40-man spot, because he's the only one that they're non-tendered who had a 40-man spot. But yeah, it's just a little bit weird, especially after acquiring him and then moving La Stella. It seemed pretty obvious that he was taking that role, a guy who, like we talked about with Len, I think it was more about flexibility than it was about money.
Right,
you're maybe going to save $1 million on the season by moving La Stella. If you're making that move specifically only for the $1 million savings, that's a little cheaper than I would hope the Cubs are being right now. But yeah, I think it was more about being able to play him at shortstop, being able to send him down to the minors when you need to, which you can't do with La Stella. Mm-hmm. Just comparing their 2018 seasons, La Stella was every bit as a light hitter as Torres is. So yeah, you're not losing a ton there. I know La Stella has the higher ceiling with the bat, but still, it made more sense to keep him. I still haven't made heads or tails of why they let him go, unless they're planning to sign him on an even cheaper deal than he already would have gotten.
Sure. But,
or yeah, I don't know. So that one's a little weird.
Yeah, that's how I felt too. Just didn't really make much sense. But yeah, if you can get them cheaper, I guess all for it. The Cubs did also add Tremel Sledge as their assistant hitting coach last week. Patrick Mooney had a quote from The Athletic explaining here. The Cubs are planning to add Tramiel Sledge to the Madden staff as an assistant hitting coach, sources told The Athletic. Sledge transitions into coaching as a minor leaguer instruction for the Cubs in 2015 and spent the last three seasons as a double-A hitting coach for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Once his big league career ended, which featured stops with the Montreal Expos, Washington Nationals, and San Diego Padres, Sledge went on to play in Japan, where he played with Yu Darvish. He's going to team up with Anthony Oppose as the two of them try and basically put together this Cubs offense, hopefully, which is, I think, the third consecutive different hitting coach group that the Cubs have had these last couple of years with Mailey Hinsky, Davis and Haynes, and now Oppose and Sledge. So who knows what he really adds. I know the Cubs were bummed to lose Andy Haynes. It didn't seem like that was going to be something that would happen because they, you know, were so high on him, as opposed to, you know, when they let Chili Davis go, it was a lot of talk that Andy Haynes was the guy that helped communicate for Davis because he couldn't, apparently. And now he's gone. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. The only time I ever talked to Chili Davis was at the Cubs convention, and it was in a media scrum. And he, at least to the media, seemed pretty good about conveying his message about what it was going to be about. I don't remember a whole lot about that conversation other than I came away feeling like, you know, that was pretty clear. But yeah, I guess maybe he struggles to convey that to other players for some reason. I don't
know. Those millennials, man, those damn kids.
Yeah. So I don't know what went wrong with that situation, if it was truly about communication and not about specifically the message. So yeah, yeah. Andy Haynes, good for him. That's a guy who's been in the organization for a while. I think he was just like a minor league instructor 2 years ago.
Right.
A guy who went to Iowa to work with Kyle Schwarber when he was there on his swing. So yeah, this is a guy who deserves a big league job. So good for him.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bummer the Cubs losing, but it's nice to see these guys here. I think Brandon Hyde is a finalist for two different jobs right now for, I don't know if it's minor league. I don't know if it's a major league like manager job or what exactly it is. I've just seen his name pop up. So it's a good chance that Brandon Hyde could be gone as well, which not surprising. This is what happens when you're good for so long. People pick pieces off your team and see if they can help them replicate some of your success. So it's right. The natural part of being good. So I've got a couple little tidbits here before we go. I've labeled this section dusting off the plate. We'll see if it sticks. Vineline, the Cubs' own team magazine that you could get at Wrigley. And, of course, I think people get it like delivered to their house or whatever during the off season, I guess. But they are unfortunately stopping publishing. Their farewell issue was released this month. So shout out to Vineline. The two guys for Vineline that were there when I was at covering the Cubs games, so those three games this last year were super helpful. I sat right next to him for all three games. Yeah. Really, really polite, fun guys to talk with, and definitely made it a lot easier for me to navigate Wrigley Field when Tony wasn't there for one of those games. So,
yeah, Pete and Gary, they're really good guys. I've sat with them. Yeah, they're really, really good reporters. They did great work with Vineline.
They did.
I'm confident that they'll be back at the ballpark next year, maybe with someone else, but you know, they're both really good writers and they know what they're doing. So I hope they land on their feet.
Me too. Both really good guys. And of course, Vineline was awesome. I remember reading that article. I mean, that was essentially where I got my prospect knowledge for a while before I really knew how to do things with baseball prospectus and the internet. So
right. And when I was a kid, the internet was still in its infancy and wasn't really like providing you any more than just, you know, news. They didn't have a whole ton of analysis that you could find. I guess Baseball Prospectus was also in its infancy back then, the late 90s. But yeah, Vineline was how I got my Cubs fix. My parents would buy me the Vineline, and I would read, you know, front to back probably two or three times.
Oh, yeah. No, I used to cut out pictures and stuff. I have plenty of, I think there's still some on my wall back in my mom's house of pictures of like Starling Castro when he was younger and probably Corey Patterson and things like that. I was a big Felix PA fan. And then I was very much a believer in Brett Jackson. Thank you, Vineline, for giving me falsehoods and these people that were supposed to be good. It's not Vineline's fault. There was a cool article that came out this weekend from Michael Bauman of The Ringer talking about Jason Hayward as an outlier to free agent superstars entering their prime. It's a cool story. You guys should check it out. But he kind of goes over like some of the big issues that Hayward's had and kind of looks at his season as a whole, his career as a whole, and how he was really, honestly, even though he wasn't necessarily an elite player, was on, you know, a chance to really be a somewhat historic player just from his combination of defense, on base percentage, being able to, you know, he called it resourceful in his base dealing. I thought that was a good way to describe Hayward prior to coming to the Cubs. And then, as we all know, things kind of changed drastically. So he kind of compares it to the idea that, you know, Harper and Machado are these guys you have to necessarily worry about. He says, no, obviously these are top 10 players coming to the prime. Jason Hayward is a very good player, or was a very good player coming into that, but I don't think anyone expected him to have Harper and Machado numbers, but it was just right. A cool comparison and kind of a nice deep dive into Hayward. So check that out. The Bryants and the Harpers went to go see Nelly this weekend. Do with that information as you will. I know Nelly's a Cardinals fan, so
yeah, I was gonna say both Bryce and Chris to the Cardinals is confirmed.
Yeah, apparently Josh Donaldson's gonna try and push for a midseason trade to get over there as well, from what I hear. And then last kind of little touch here before we end the show. David Bodie's walk-off grand slam against the Nationals this year was rated MLB Network's best finish of 2018. You and I both kind of talked about this before the show started. Apparently there's like multiple lists of things, and there was another like best walk-offs or something like that for 2018. Yeah. And Hayward's was on there, but David Bodie's wasn't.
Yeah, so I guess maybe being in one category disqualifies you from another.
So that's annoying, because Hayward's was in there too. It was 11.
Was it? Yeah. So yeah, they did like four best walk-offs, and Hayward's was one of them. I think Ryan Braun walk-off homer was another one, and I can't recall the other two. But yeah, the Hayward home run was among best walk-offs, and I just remember thinking, you know, David Bodie had a pretty good one, I think. Yeah. Hey, he had a couple really big ninth inning home runs, if I remember correctly.
He did. That he did. Yeah, I don't know. Clearly two people making two different lists probably, but or two different producers for the MLB Network. But yeah, interesting. So that about does it for episode 157 for Lockdown Cubs. We added, I don't know if anyone has tried to use this yet, but we added a voicemail and text line. It's on our Twitter page, the number. You can text us or call us your thoughts. So if you guys do want to share something about the Cubs this offseason, or have questions about something and want to potentially be on the podcast, it does give me the audio. I can record it and put it back on the podcast. So if you have questions, check out the phone number on our Lockdown Cubs page. You can follow that on Twitter at Lockdown Cubs. Beyond that, I am Sean R. Sears on Twitter. You can follow Ryan at Ryan Q. Davis. Ryan is now writing for Forbes, so you should read all his things, because why wouldn't you? You can find my stuff in NBC Sports as soon as the spring training starts kicking in. Beyond that, mainly just podcasting for the moment, but we'll bring in plenty of Cubs news as we can get it to you. Ryan, anything you want to say here before we end the show?
No, I just winter meetings around the corner, so Hopefully good news from Vegas soon enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys stick around for more episodes this week. Ryan and I have a few more things planned, but beyond that, enjoy the rest of your week and go Cubs.